so good. They stone you just like they said they would. They stone you when you're trying to go home. They'll stone you when you're there all alone. But I would not feel so all alone. Everybody must get stoned.
Well, Spalda, we said last week that we're going to start getting into more specifics in theology, and I guess we're kind of going to do that today, but this may sound more like generalizations. But today we're going to talk about legalism and antinomianism, your two favorite words, right?
Yeah, it's so funny. I think when I first entered to the Reformed world, those were like the first two words that I came across, and I felt dumb. I was like, oh my goodness, what did I get myself into?
And so just to define them, legalism, I think everyone knows, it can be a number of different things. It can be adding works to justification. It can be adding your own list of works that aren't in the Bible as something you must do. It can be relying on works before God to in pride, like the Pharisees. And then antinomianism is living in sin, taking advantage of God's grace, thinking it doesn't matter how you live. And the point I want to make today is the longer you're a Christian, as you move through different sort of movements and theologies and denominations, you see these two things always rearing their ugly head no matter where you go, legalism and antinomianism.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to argue in a moment that all legalists are antinomian and vice versa. But for me as a new believer, when I became a Christian back in the early 80s, the first thing I was told is you cannot listen to secular music. And so I remember, matter of fact, the person I did this with is here in the Valley in Phoenix. And we talked about this. We met about a year ago when I visited here. But we actually took all of our albums and we built a fire in the middle of the street. And we threw all of our albums in the fire.
Oh, my goodness.
And, oh, man, I regret that. There was some great music.
You were one of those people.
I was one of those. We were actually having fun using some of them as frisbees. But, you know, you just take these drastic steps you think are required to be a good Christian.
Yeah.
You don't really watch TV anymore. And of course, you have to have daily devotions. And nothing wrong, of course, with daily devotions. But the way they're drilled into you, that your whole life is the discipline of daily devotions. And if you don't have those, you're going to be far from God, not blessed, no strength. So don't miss those. And then you were sort of, I don't know if shamed is the right word, but pressured to, whenever possible, be sharing the gospel.
Yeah.
And that was sort of proof that you were an on fire Christian.
Yeah.
That you were always sharing the gospel.
You can't be lukewarm, right?
Yeah, exactly. So for me, that legalism just hit right away as what Christianity was. Can you describe some details of your early legalism?
Yeah, a lot of it was like similar, right? Like the music stuff and the, you know, no movie, secular movies or whatever. But for me, the biggest one was like reading the Bible daily. Like that, like a distinct mark of being a Christian was that. And I mean, on a positive side, Pastor, like in like 2 years, I was able to read the Bible like through it twice. So it was like, that was like, I guess a positive. I got to get more exposed to the Bible or whatever. But underlying that was, right, like a wrong mentality. Like my relationship with God is contingent on this, like how much I read. But it was also like, I didn't recognize it then, but looking back, it was a thing. I was a little bit superstitious because I remember my third grade year, one of my friends, he made a comment and it stuck with me since that day, that if you read the whole Bible, God tells you when the end of the world is. And I like, right? Like if you would have told me older, like, oh, do you believe that? I would have said straight up no. But as I was reading the Bible, I was like, you never know, right? Like in my mind, I was like, I have maybe, right? God could do anything. But what if I get some special insight? So that was a little bit of kind of some weird mentality on my part. But I could really relate with you burning stuff, because actually it's funny. I got into an argument with my English teacher, because he was giving us like these like weird secular books, and to the point where like I told him I am not going to read anything. So he started giving me some like neutral stuff or whatever, things that I thought were like okay to read, like Metamorphosis by Frank Kafka. And it's a funny, the argument started because he made me, but part of the assignment was reading Brave New World. And I was like, oh, this is such a depraved book, or this is so bad or whatever. And looking back, I was like, yeah, that's the point of the book. But I ended up burning. Me and my brother, Abraham, we made a little campfire, and we started like throwing like the books that we thought were like bad or secular. Anyways, it's super cringe. I'm a little bit embarrassed about that. But yeah, like in this like blind zeal, you think this is how the Christian life ought to be. But let me ask you a question quickly, Pastor, because like going back to the music stuff, do you think, at least as a new believer, that was maybe important or necessary for you to like really, I don't know, have some sort of symbol that like, oh yeah, I've embraced Jesus, and embracing Jesus means some sort of radical change in my own life?
I mean, yes and no. No, in the sense that if I hadn't been told that, you know, it's not like I was worshiping my music or anything.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. It was just, you know, classic rock from the 70s type stuff.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't that bad. So no, I don't think it would have hurt my sanctification. But when you think of Romans 14, that if you think it's sin, then don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly being told it was sinful, then my conscience was very sensitive.
Yeah.
To not wanting to disappoint God and listen to any of it.
Mm.
And so I got into, you know, popular Christian music back then. And then when
a little bit of a downgrade, huh?
It was. I know when you get older in the Lord, now you want to throw away all your Christian music.
Oh my goodness. Go
back to the good stuff.
Uh-huh.
But no, I think the point is that the danger, of course, is the legalism that creeps in.
Yeah.
Because once you are one of them that do these things, you do think you're of the elite Christians, that God is looking on you more favorably than most in the church. Even sharing your faith, you know, you end up doing it at the wrong times, not being sensitive to where people are at, whether they're even interested, because you have this pressure to be spiritual.
Yeah.
You have this pressure to prove that you're a genuine, committed Christian. And you do end up trusting in works. I mean, like you said, it becomes superstitious to miss a quiet time. All of a sudden, you think you're far from God. You're not really understanding the implications of the gospel because you're so focused on your disciplines.
Yeah.
And so can you relate to any of that
that
elite feeling?
Always, right? Like, yeah, that's, yeah. You think you find something new, you feel like you discover something new, and you have some sort of like special knowledge that, you know, only you have, and you have to kind of impose it on others, or kind of more than anything, show it off. That, oh, look how different I am, which is, looking back, it's a little bit Gnostic, right? Special knowledge. Right. But yeah, I can really relate to the, like one, sharing faith at the wrong time. I went to a predominantly Muslim school, and I was so zealous for, like, you know, sharing my faith. I would often like interrupt class and get to like these religious conversations, not only with my classmates, but also with the teacher, about like, you know, the Muslim faith or Christianity, to the point that I even started passing out Bibles to like my friends and my teachers in like during class. So I was that obnoxious person. And when it came to like my own personal day, I felt like my day was going to be dictated by whether I read the Bible or I prayed. And not only, it wasn't just about doing those things. For me, it's like how sincere and how like into the word or into the spirit you're going to be, you know, because not just, you can't just do it like whatever. You have to be, you know, the language that I would hear, you have to be really in the spirit, you know, you have to really be in the word or whatever. I don't know. And that really creeped in, like you said, to my own conscience, and think like, I have to be in this constant spiritual high to think that like I'm doing well, or that my day is doing well, that I'm glorifying God with my own life. And I think I said this last week, I don't know, over time it gets exhausting, you know, it gets exhausting. And I don't know, at least that was for me. I burned out real quick, because it's not really sustainable.
Yeah. And it's good that, you know, the Lord sees the zeal in that, and he's patient, and
mm-hmm.
even though we were pretty obnoxious and full of ourselves.
Yeah. It's really awkward because I sometimes run across these people like older now, and I apologize. Like, look, man, because they bring it up. Hey, you still do this or that? It's like, yeah, man, I just want to apologize. And I feel a little bit embarrassed, but it is what it is, right? God uses it too.
And what happens, and this is what you start seeing across every denomination or tribe or whatever you want to call it, is that there's always legalists everywhere. And legalists, biblically, are actually antinomians. And what I mean by that, if your focus is on self, on your works, you're arrogant toward others, you're pretty much ignoring the commands of the Bible.
Yeah.
I mean, what does the Bible say about how we treat others? Consider one another more important than others. Live at peace as much as possible. You know, the Sermon on the Mount, if you call your brother a fool, you're guilty of hellfire. And what are legalists always doing? They're always calling their brother and sister a fool. They're always condemning them, even publicly. You know, what does the Sermon on the Mount say about noticing the log in your eye before you condemn others? Legalists never notice the log in their eye. They're always picking out the sin in others. But what's interesting is that in Matthew 23, Jesus condemns the Pharisees by saying, "You also outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness."
Wow.
Now there's that word lawlessness. That's the word antinomian. And so here, the most devoted, these were people who were fasting twice a week. They were in the Word every day. They prayed every day. They were outwardly holy, set apart, better than others. And Jesus says, "You're lawless." And that's what I mean when I say all legalists are actually antinomians. They're following their own rules and laws to make them feel better, but they're ignoring the laws of the Bible.
Wow.
They're ignoring what Jesus actually said how to live. And so it is really messed up.
And I
think when you go on your journey, you go through it, and you think every time you come to a new theological position, you've sort of resolved that. But as we'll see, that's not the case. But when you think about this idea that you're actually antinomian when you become this selfish, prideful legalist, any thoughts on that?
First of all, I never thought about it like that. And that's actually super, super insightful, because looking back, I mean, I remember every time, like I think I said this last week, not letting my parents or my family listen to Christmas, you know, music during Christmas, or not watching. I controlled the TV, what we could watch. You know, I was on my high horse. And essentially what you're doing is you're trying to create other Christians into your own image, unknowingly. And like, in one sense, in ignorance and zeal, you have this impression that it's all in the name of Christ, it's all biblical. But looking back, I mean, you're just trying to conform people to you, to what you think is best, to what you think, you know, the outworkings of the Christian life should look like, when it comes to like music, TV, or whatever. But yeah, I never thought about it like that. Yeah, legalism is antinomian, because you're not getting those laws from the scripture. You're getting them from yourself, you know, your own perception of life and culture. And dang, it's really, really interesting. I haven't thought about it like that, but it makes sense. And it's interesting because, I mean, it seems to be like the oldest sin in the book, right? Trying to conform either yourself or others into your own image. And that's usually detrimental.
Yeah. So when we talk about our journey, for me, coming into the Reform world, I certainly thought it would be different. Especially, I remember we went to a party, a church party at someone's house, and we had been brought up in the Baptist culture, you know, at least since I was a Christian, and Cheryl was brought up that way. You just don't drink alcohol.
Nope.
Christians don't drink alcohol. You know that.
Nope.
And so you go from that world, and then we go to our first Reformed church, and one of the elders brews his own beer, and he brought out beer for everyone. I'm not a big beer drinker, but my wife was so excited. She loves beer. And so it was like, wow, these people are free. You know? Then they bring out the cigars, and you're like, man, this is great. And so you think you've sort of arrived, you think you've left that past legalism, but then you just find new legalisms.
Yeah, it's true.
And so now you find Reformed people boasting in how they worship.
Mm.
We follow a certain guideline that's biblical, and God is not pleased with anyone else in the world that doesn't follow these biblical, what they think are biblical guidelines.
Mm.
You know, when you try to discuss women in the church and women in leadership, there's immediate sort of suspicion and condemnation if you don't hold the line.
No.
You know, it's not just here's where we agree or disagree. There's this pressure to conform. And then there's confessionalism. It's not as much that there is a confession. And we'll talk about confessionalism in a future episode, but the pride in the confessionalism, the culture that becomes very legalistic, thinking we're better because we follow this confession written by men in the, you know, 17th century. And then, of course, you have the culture wars. You have to be on the right side of the cultural battles or you're held with suspicion. So at first you think you've left the legalism of the past, then you realize, nope, it's all the same problems, the same focus on us, our pride, our elitism, and the same ignoring the Sermon on the Mount, how to treat others, that we are to love our enemies, you know, accept one another with differences, be at peace, focus on the gospel mission. And so there's that, you just go through that reality that we're not going to escape this in this world.
Mm.
No group has figured it out. Any thoughts as you think back on your journey?
I mean, I still remember the first time I got invited. Same thing, house party, people started smoking and drinking. And I was like, what debauchery, you know? But one side, I was like, dang, this is terrible. But the other side, I'm like, well, no, this is what freedom in Christ looks like or whatever. So yeah, like I get that shock. But what I find interesting looking back is that you go from dying, you know, on like one hill to like dying in another hill, you know? You die on weird hills in the Reformed world. Like you mentioned a few, but I remember distinctly when I was still in like in my cage stage stuff or whatever, I went to Israel through a school trip. It was cool. Got a scholarship for it or whatever. Went for 10 days for cheap. And, you know, part of our trip, we went to the Jordan River. And, you know, whoever wants to get rebaptized or whatever, you know, no problem. You should do it. I got into an argument with like the whole group and with like the group leader. I don't regret, you know, like speaking up because I think it was wrong because they did ask us, what do y'all think? You know, any thoughts? And so they gave me permission to speak. The one thing I do regret is like, one, the approach, clearly like super aggressive, very prideful or whatever. But my argument, like it was, looking back, it was really dumb. I started like arguing about church membership or something like that. Like, oh no, this has to be in the context of like you have to be a formal member at a church or like your baptism should lead to church membership or something like that. I don't know, some like weird hill that I was like really making enemies throughout the whole trip for, like for no reason. So that's one. Another thing I remember was I was part of the Baptist student ministry group in my college, and they started talking about I don't know something about contemporary music or whatever. And then, you know, I was super prideful, new to the Reformed world, and I was like, no, it's all about hymns or whatever. Look at the history. Look at the theological whatever deepness behind whatever. You know, it was like all this like these weird hills that I was really making enemies and kind of pushing people away, and it all stemmed from like this perception of superiority. I looked down on the rest of the group because, if in my mind, if only they knew what I know, right? They'd understand or whatever. It's cringe, but it's funny. You go from dying on these like weird hills, like secular music or drinking, to like you said, you just switch it to something else.
Yeah. Yeah. From the other side. Hatred of legalism, and I certainly saw this in my Baptist days, my Bible church days, and in the Reformed days, hatred of legalism can also end up being sort of a legalism in itself. And that leads to antinomianism. So, for example, many people see legalism in others, and they'll say they love gospel preaching, but then they do this in order to focus on their self, to indulge, to live for self. And so the love of forgiveness simply becomes sort of a means that they can do whatever they want and live for self, and there's no eternal consequence because they understand the gospel. And so the legalism becomes the pride in spotting legalism.
Yeah.
And I can think of people and churches in my past, and they would say, man, pastor, I love your preaching. You preach the gospel, and not all this legalism. And then they end up committing adultery, and they leave the church, they leave the faith. And I remember a guy, I won't say where, but man, he loved my preaching, loved the church. But then he leaves his wife and he's living with another woman. And
wow.
I finally got to visit him and his eyes were just cold and empty. And we were good friends. Wow. We had been through a lot together. I'd helped him through a lot of difficulties. And we sat there and he kind of looked like he had hatred for me now. And
my goodness.
And I couldn't help but think to myself, this is a guy who loved my sermons.
Yeah.
But again, there are people who hear the gospel and they're hearing it as means by which they don't have to ever change.
Mm-hmm.
They can just have this free forgiveness. And that's very daunting and humbling when you realize that's going on. You know, the freedom in understanding justification is that you are free now to serve God, not out of fear, but to love others and live for Christ. But it's really messed up in all the worlds. In the Protestant world, I don't know about the Greek Orthodox and Roman Catholic, they have their own messes, but in the Protestant world, you see these things too, and I'm sure you've seen this other side, haven't you?
Yeah, and it's interesting because, like, in many ways, I'm there right now, right? In many ways, like, I see the bad part of where I used to be, the bad parts of, like, the Reform world that I've been able to experience. But at the same time, you know, like where I am now, like there, like you said, that danger is very much still present. Like if I want to be like arrogant about, oh, look, I'm able to see the big picture, but others now, I'm able to see everyone's blind spots, but they can't, you know, and that becomes, you know, a blind spot in and of itself too, and a source of pride. So kind of regurgitating a little bit what we talked about, I said last week is like, I don't know, if anything, this side, I'm really working on like trying to be like humble, because that's what I struggle with, right? Like all my life, it's been, you know, my identity, my pride is based on what I know now or what group I belong to. But like you said, I mean, if we start reading the Gospels closely and it's like, okay, my identity and my pride lies in Christ, then there's really no room for pride in me, right? I don't contribute anything. Right, I'm just a pathetic sinner, right? In complete surrender to Christ and what He has to offer. My theological knowledge would never surpass Christ's, you know, knowledge or anything like that. So what do I have to boast? So if anything, right now it's just like a journey of like one, understanding that I don't know everything, and two, trying as best as I can to live in harmony with people who disagree with me or who are very different from me. And like I said, it's a lot more difficult to do than to say.
Yeah, and I think the point of all this is that when you continue on your spiritual journey, you're always tempted to think you've arrived, you're at the right group, that this group, this doctrine, this history, this denomination has escaped it. They're better. And then, as a genuine believer, it's just after a while, the delusion hits, right? Yeah. The reality hits of the fallen world. And there's a danger. There's a danger, like, again, there's a danger to think, well, I'll go Roman Catholic. They seem to all be united. They're not, but you can understand why they would think that.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's a danger of feeling like you've been conned.
Hmm.
So you go through, you know, what's called deconstruction. You're not quite sure what you believe because you're finding these things at every corner. There's a disorientation that goes on.
Yep.
And then there's the question of labels. There's nothing wrong with labels. We need labels to identify theologies. It's just a way to talk.
Yeah.
But you realize after a while, I don't have to identify myself with a label. You know, I don't agree on everything the Reformed think, or I don't agree on everything Baptists think, or there may be some things I like about what Mennonites have stood for.
Yeah.
And a lot of things I don't. You know, you start studying and there's a freedom in that. I understand labels. We need to be able to have discussions, but I don't need them. I don't need them to define me, and I don't need the approval of other people with a label. And then I think finally what you end up looking for, at least at my age, is you just look for Christ in people. If somebody professes Christ, I want to see Christ in them. That's what you're looking for. And so there's a real advantage of teaching at Grand Canyon University, because it's a broad evangelical university. And so I have students from just everywhere. You know, every branch of Protestantism pretty much, and many of them are just lovely Christians at their young age with very different theologies, you know, still based on the gospel, but you start to see that and your vision widens. And it does humble you. But how about you? I'm sure many of our listeners relate as they've been through these journeys. I know you're still very young, but have you experienced any of this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, something I'm really grateful for is the school I went to, because it was extremely, like, the staff was extremely diverse. And I first saw that as a threat, you know. So I have some professors who were charismatic, some were Anglican, some were Catholic, some were just, you know, general evangelical. Some people were a new perspective on Paul, people, you know, Calvinistic, everywhere, all over the place. And I first saw that as, like, a threat. And I remember talking to some people, and some people didn't, in the reform world, did not like the fact that I went to that school. But looking back, I see how healthy that was, you know, because, like, these people, you're able to witness, like you said, that a lot of these people, they genuinely love Christ. They are committed to the gospel. They're committed to the teachings of Jesus genuinely and dedicate their whole life to it. And that's a little bit shocking, right? Because you expect bad, in my mind, bad theology will lead to bad living. But no, I mean, on the contrary, these are very Christ-like people in many ways. And yeah, at least for me, that was a big part, at least in my journey, to start getting off my own high horse. Like, well, maybe Reformed people don't have everything figured out. Maybe truly Christ is present in different Christian traditions, even though I essentially did not believe that before. And I don't know, and kind of, you said something when you're like, you end up looking for Christ in professing Christians. It reminds me of something Justin Martyr said, a Christian in the second century. He says, there are some among us who, although they may not articulate our doctrines, they articulate them through their own lives. You know, they cannot say it in a word, but they could say it in their own life. And I'm like, maybe there's a lot of wisdom in that.
Yeah, that's good. All right. Well, I promise you listeners that we will get into the specific views that we've sort of changed over the years. We'll start that next week, but I hope this was encouraging.
Well, they'll stone you when you're walking on the street. They'll stone you when you're trying to keep your seat.